We have got Stephen Sayers with us today. We've had loads of people come on the podcast and say, yeah, this guy is hardcore. We're going to get his story off him. He's got a movie in production. We've got one book out. We've got another book in development. All the links to Stephen's stuff are in the description box below this video. So please click down and check out his stuff. And he's down here with Steve Rafe. And Steve's got a YouTube channel, so I'll put the link down to his YouTube channel. And there's loads of gangster stories and crazy stuff down there. If you're into this kind of stuff, please click down and support what both of these guys are doing. So thanks for coming on, Stephen.
Yeah, thank you very much.
What is this book about then?
Well, it's about my life, really, basically, you know. It's not glamorising crime. It's showing you the life, how I end up into crime, the effect it had on my life. It had on me children in which we are living my life, you know. It's an interesting, it's got a few highs, it's got a few lows, it's got a few, put a smile on your face at the end of it, you know, hopefully, you know.
So your family's quite prominent in the underworld, but let's go back to, like, where are you from and all that stuff.
I'm from the west end of Newcastle, a place called Alswick. My family, a big family, my great-grand had 10 children, 9 daughters, one boy, you know. All them had 4 and 5 kids each. So, like, say, my dad had 40 full cousins on his mother's side.
Wow.
So they were all, like, say, they're all barrow boys, and you know, that's where we stem from. My great grand was, she had all the barrows. The barrows were illegal at the time. And as a young kid, like, say, 6 years of age, me cousins would stand, it was a day's work in a sense, you know, I would stand the lamppost and look for police to stop my family from being arrested for street trading, you know. And I suppose, in a sense, it made me a bit anti police, you know.
So you're selling stuff out of wheelbarrows, what kind of merch?
They were like carts, you know, like some barrows for, not like wheelbarrows as you see in the building site, you know. It was fruit and veg.
Oh, like fruit and veg stands?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's how you learnt to get your hustle on as a youngster?
Yes, it did, huh?
And were you getting in any kind of trouble when you was a young person?
Yes, especially if I didn't see the police come.
Did you actually think it was a wheelbarrow, by the way?
Yeah, I'm trying to explain it for the Americans, because they're going to hear barrow and think wheelbarrow. Yeah.
I thought, fuck yeah, I can't believe you asked that.
It'd be a barrow 3 foot wide and 6 foot long, you know.
Yeah. I might ask you a few things that I already know the answer to, but in a way that the Americans can understand them. Yeah.
I think you want to get the accent to the English, and I started first.
They have a hard time understanding him.
Yeah.
So what about early arrest then?
First arrest, I was 14 years of age. I came up with a nightclub called La Dolce Vita. 14 years of age. I got myself involved. I was witnessing a big fight outside, you know. I got in a car with the lads. I thought it was good, you know, bigger lads, you know. And they bumped into the lads again in the street. A fight erupted. Tools were used. One lad lost his eye. High-speed chase from Newcastle City Centre. I got arrested. I got remanded. I went to court when I was 15 years of age. Got detention centre. The other lad got Borstal. One of them got 2 years. I came out of there. And I applied for a licence for the barracks, but unfortunately the licences were being a conviction. I'd get a conviction, I wasn't allowed it, you know. So, in a sense, I suppose the days of thieving Stephen started, you know.
You wanted to get on the straight and narrow.
Yes, I did, yes, but unfortunately that happened, you know. So,
yeah.
And the other occupation I knew was thieving, so that's the path I took.
And did you have a knack for fighting from a young age?
I used to like to roll about, huh? I wasn't shy to have a roll about anybody. I wasn't trained or anything like that, just full of bad intentions, I suppose.
Do you think that was just a natural thing then, a natural ability?
I don't know, but I suppose it was just environment when I was brought up in, you know, and like it's a survival, I suppose it's really different from different parts of Liverpool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rough and tumble.
Yes, the rough and tumble, or you get bullied.
So if you can't go on the straight and narrow then, what are you going to turn your life to after that?
Well, I turned my life to crime, you know. I become a criminal. I got a conviction when I was 18. For burgling a cash and carry. I got another one for trying to burgle in the premises for cigarettes, you know, like high value stuff at the time as a young lad, you know.
Yeah.
basically, that sort of stuff, you know.
And how were you doing with your family at that point in your life?
Well, I was a young single laddie, so life was a big adventure for me at the time, you know.
And because you've been getting in trouble with the police, is that like, how are your parents, like, are they trying to steer you?
Well, my dad had a variety of different jobs, you know, like, say, occupations, I should say. He was a barrow boy. He had his own company, had a haulage company. He also had a scrapyard, which I worked the scrapyard for him. When he worked the breweries, it was custom them days to, like, so when he delivered the beer, you would receive a bottle of courtesy of the people, the bar, and the manager of the bar would give you a bottle of beer, bite of beer. Yeah, basically that sort of thing, you know. So at the end of the day, he was absolutely mortal drunk.
He worked hard though, right?
Oh yeah, drunk hard.
Because we got off the rails young on the drugs, like the ecstasy and the speed and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Did that come into it with you?
Well, I think everybody did in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
It hit Newcastle, you know, just like, it was like a plague, it took over the place, you know?
Yeah.
I come across it in Tenerife in the 80s, and I used to contact the lads in Newcastle. I even found a few of the lads up in Liverpool last time, they heard ecstasy. And they were saying, "Oh, you're dancing with lads." I said, "Oh, yeah." So that was the first time coming across it, you know.
So what was the rave scene like up there where you
bouncing
from?
It was bouncing when it hit it, you know, it just took over the place.
Yeah.
People who you've never seen before in your life dance, tough guys were up dancing and all that, you know. So give them a waffle on the dance floor. It was good times, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose it was the same all over the country when it hit, you know. Well, that's drugs, it's not the best in the world for you, but they were good at the time.
it's funny, because there was, like, just before it started, there was a lot of football violence in Manchester and Liverpool and that. But you'd see him about a year later in the rave and the dancing together and hugging one another, and you think, "Fuck you, else are you?" You'd never expect that.
Yeah, yeah. If you had one of me down your neck in the 80s and you bumped your nose and you're kiss a cuddle. You would. Yeah, there was no badness in you.
All of them were nice and everything, even. You know what I mean?
You see the most enemy, but I could look.
Yeah.
I love you. I love you back.
You too, bro.
I had a mate out of Manchester. Heath, do you remember him? He was a soccer hooligan.
Yeah.
He had all these fucking chains and he was all stabbed up and shit. He's like, "I'm not coming to Liverpool, you know, that fucking all my hooliganism." So we brought him, was it like the State or one of those places?
Took him to State, 8088.
And all the hooligans are just hugging each other. Never seen anything like it.
Was that on me?
Yeah, on me.
Yeah.
We were fucking hammering in Arizona, weren't we?
We're knocking shit out one another the week after and on Saturday, like, you know what I mean?
It was strange when the streets.
Yeah.
So, when he was young, he looked up to people like the Taxman and Duffy, and he was telling me all these stories.
Good pals of mine, they told him.
So you grew up with them, did you then?
Yes, I did, yeah. Lee Duffy was my friend, and he was the one who introduced us to Brian Copper. He phoned us up. Lee Duffy was a fighting man.
Yeah.
And he phoned us up and he said, "Stephen, I've just had the hardest fight in my life for the strongest man I've ever come across." And for Lee Duffy to say that, this kid has got to be something special. See, that's how I found out about Brian Copper. He introduced us to Brian. We met each other and we got on like a house on fire, you know, and we've been pals ever since. He's my big brother.
You said Brian was showing off his skills one day.
Abnormally strong. "No, you've got to bear in mind." I said to him, I says, "Listen, I know you're a strong lad, but how strong are you?" He said, "Excuse me, Steve, just mind one side." So, "What's he doing?" He got behind a car and he lifted the back end of a car and he pushed it over. No, I'm not on about like legs of there to there. I'm on about from there to there.
Yeah.
And five or six vehicles. And this man was benching, you know, he's squatting 300 kilo, you know. So you can imagine how strong he's benching 250 kilo. Abnormally strong, boxer, full to the brim of bad intentions, a very dangerous combination.
Yeah.
On his day, I'd have put Brian Cobble down to probably the best man on the cobbles in the country.
Really?
That's, you know, what could he do? I've seen him knock men up 20 stone with slaps. Slaps. Breaking jaws with slaps.
Yeah.
Too strong, man.
That's what you were saying, wasn't it? He was one of the hardest guys in the whole country at that
time. Yeah.
He could pick a 20 stone man above his head with not a problem, just pick him straight up, you know? He was going to go in for the strongest man, Britain competition, you know?
Yeah.
But he went down the wrong path. But he's my pal, Brian. I've got a lot of time for him and a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He was in here. We watched his documentary as well, McIntyre's Underworld.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
Taxman, it was a while ago, that one, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
You can see him on there. You can see what he is, you know?
Yeah, he's bouncing around in that, isn't he?
In prison down there, no one had a bad word to say about him.
People. Especially to his face. Sorry about that.
Some people say, like, Duffy be a bully, or not Duffy, that Viv Graham's a bully and all this and all that. But when he got to Brian Cockerell, no one would say a bad word about him whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Good lad. I bought Lee Duffy through. Viv Graham had the reputation of being the fighting man of Tyneside.
Yeah.
And Duffy had one of the same, basically, for Tyneside, you know. So I brought Duffy for to fight him. It was going to be for a lump of money, but it didn't take place, you know. We were West End. West End was like, say, heightened sort of people, you know, like this sort of area. And the doorman were all big lads from Gateshead.
Yeah.
And the West End used to always clash with them. The big lads were sitting about, the West End was shooting them or stabbing them back, you know. And this went on for a while, I suppose, when Duffy came back. Duffy represented the West End as a fighter, and he wanted to be on with Viv Graham. I took him to a club once, and he knocked about 10 of these doormen out, you know. These people are big lads. These aren't little lads, you know. These, some of them are 20 stone men, you know. I never get one. He was at the back, and he went, "Come on, Duffy, I'll fight you." Duffy just marched forward, knocked him in the toe. There were really baby dinosaurs on the floor, man. You're talking tonnage on the... Was that many? They were talking tonnage on the floor.
He didn't even look like a fighter, though. Bit of a handsome guy, really, you know what I mean?
I didn't know about that. How long were you in jail?
Too long.
Was this when you were doing your six?
No comment.
So how did he get so handy? Because he was a new youngster, wasn't he, Duffy?
Chain boxer, 6'3". He looked like Dolph Lundgren with the Rocky. Yeah. You know? He was, when he was youth, he was very bully when he was a young kid, you know.
Mm.
I think that had an effect on him when he was older. He had no fear.
Yeah.
No fear whatsoever, you know. Screw was telling him he was knocked out in jail. When he got there, the old screws were new about him. Turned up there, come with the cell, walked along the passageway, you know, had no cigarettes. Screw was smoking, he took the tab off him, took the tab box out, and had looked, was only 3 or 4 tabs in. Told him to go out and buy him a pack of tabs. Yeah, it's not normal, you know. The school is not supposed to get up and message, it's going to be a bit of shopping.
Yeah.
And the school told me that story.
Yeah, they were scared of him.
Terrified him. Yeah. So when most people come across him, you know.
So what was the story behind his demise?
He had a lot of vicks in Middlesbrough, you know. He had an incident, fight starting, got stabbed a couple of times and got stabbed in the back. It wasn't exactly Victoria Cross material, was it, you know?
Right.
So he was a violent man who lived a violent life, and he died a violent death.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a nice person. He was my friend, you know. And like, so,
bit of a coward's way in the back, though, wasn't it?
As I say, it's not exactly Victoria Cosmo too, no. Is it?
Didn't the taxman have a word with that guy?
The both of them, that's how they got pals. The both of them had a fight with each other, you know. That's how they met each other.
Yeah.
They got the gun, like, and then took on like a house on fire, you know, for a few months, and then they died, you know.
Yeah.
Good. They took them together. What a force. What a force. Wow.
You wouldn't like them showing up at your house?
Well, they're going for the wall, not the door, them two, man.
They're not coming through the door, they're coming through the wall.
There you are. That's what I see about them.
All right, so you tried to stay on the straight and narrow. That didn't work out with the barrow, so you're getting into crime and Borstal.
Mm-hmm.
You're in your 20s now. Rave scenes hit.
The rave scene, what happened was, on the 12th of August 1987, my 22nd birthday, was a robbery committed through Sunderland, and it was Britain's biggest post office raid. The Great Train Robbery was robbed on the train, obviously. Coincidentally, it was robbed at Sears Crossing. my brother got me. The police went to my mum's to arrest me and my brother. I wasn't there. My brother got arrested, charged, put on remand for 12 months. A police officer came forward, WPC, and she says, "That isn't a man, but he resembles him." And she was the one who was going to pick me up and fit us up, you know. So I spent a year on the run in the 80s to go and move abroad. It was you heard on the TV, you know, but you know, to actually take the trip abroad was a big thing at the time, you know. End up in Spain.
Did you have people in Spain that welcomed you and took care of you?
I always get on with scousers all over, you know. And wherever you go, you can't come up with scousers. And the chances are one of them will be on the tours.
You can't not bump into them, can you?
Yeah, can't everywhere. Well, got, you know, and I could introduce myself to different people around the country, you know, and they said, well, I was like a helping hand if I needed it, you know.
Yeah.
Which I did, you know. I went down to London. London, some London lads. Freddie Foreman. Yeah, and different people like that. Assisted, well, you know.
Yeah, we've had Dave Courtney on the podcast.
Yeah.
He spoke highly of you guys as well. Yeah, I saw some stuff he did on YouTube. Right, you
know?
So what's it like being on the run in Spain?
I was on the run in Spain for a while, then I ended up in Tenerife. From there, we end up in... first of all, it was starting off in Blackpool. There was not many winter resorts you can go to in England. Blackpool's one, and Aviemore's the other. Now, I says to my cousin, who was with us at the time, I says, no, look, if we get chased around Blackpool, we can't get away. If we get chased around Aviemore, you're stuck in the snow. Let me go to Blackpool.
Yeah.
So we went to Blackpool, we stayed until the last day, till the lights went off, you know. Then we We decided to go to Tenerife. We went to Spain first, Tenerife, came back, got sick of it, all of this. You can only stay in the sun and drink so much. Came back, I stayed on the, I put on the island, put up Scotland for a while. Came back and spent the last 2.5 months, 3 months in a little flat in Newcastle, you know?
Yeah.
And I sat there one day, and I was just sitting with the radio on, nothing, you know? And a news flash came on Radio 1, and says that two men have been acquitted for the robbery of Britain's biggest post office robbery.
Acquitted.
Yes, and once I got knocked guilty, I knew then I was okay, you know?
Right.
But until then, I was worrying, you know?
Well, and the police, like, all right, we're going to set him up for something if he's got off this. Yeah. Is that what they did next?
Well, what they're doing is, you know, they've never left me alone. They've always been on my case, you know. They've always come and arrested before somebody had one drummed up charges.
Yeah.
That's always happened. Excessive sentences, you know. The guidelines for the crimes always get flung out the window. Like, say, I got a sentence of 2 years, the guidelines. What can you mean work? I got a 10-year sentence. The guidelines were like 3 to 4 years, 2 to 4 years, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. So your first prison sentence was 2 years, your proper one after Boston?
Yes, it was. I got 2 years. I took what I'd done was I got told that a doorman had Sears, that the Sears family and the associates weren't allowed in the nightclub, you know. In the 80s, that would have been like putting petrol on a fire. So we decided to go around and beat the shit out of them. So I took 5 grand round with us and he attacked them, bashed them up. Actually, the video's on YouTube.
Is it?
Viv Graham teamed up with members of a gang from Newcastle's West End. The gang wanted control over Hobo's nightclub in Bath Lane in Newcastle. The club's now closed, but in 1989, it was thriving using doormen and video cameras as security measures. This recording shows 6 men arriving at the club door. It's the first time it's been seen on TV. Viv Graham is last in, wearing a white shirt. It's 1:45 on the morning of Saturday, September the 30th. The gang stride straight past the reception desk. Another camera shows the receptionist running upstairs to warn the manager. The head doorman, 28-year-old Stuart Watson, weighing 17 stone, approaches reception, hands in pocket. Viv Graham attacks him, cheered on by his companions. One shouts orders to the receptionist. Viv Graham now has a pressure point on Stuart Watson's neck, preventing him from defending himself. As the beating goes on, another doorman shows signs of intervening. A punch from one of the gang stops that. Stuart Watson is then dragged out of the camera vision onto the dance floor. The receptionist, in shock, desperately tries to wipe up the blood, then calls the police. The gang depart, led by Viv Graham. They'd been in the club for just 3 minutes and 41 seconds. As they swagger out, one pauses to tell the manager that it was a private fight.
Viv got 18 months for chinning the man, I got 2.5 years for watching it.
Yeah.
So that's what fucked up, that, isn't it?
Comes with a tone of it, I suppose.
Yeah. Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. What prison did you go to?
For the 2 years, I went to Durham and I went to Accrington, you know, for the 2 year sentence. Got a bit of parole, you know, on it, you know, see, it's a couple of weeks on it, I suppose.
What was your reception like in Accrington?
Well, you've been, you know,
probably home from home, really.
It's a local jail, you know.
That the one you liked?
Yes, loved it there.
It was like them days, the enhanced regimes hadn't been installed in them, so therefore it was everybody's open it all day, smoking weed and drinking beer. And that's it, tell you.
Free weights, fucking like,
you can go to the gym anytime you wanted. You can get drunk anytime you wanted.
Yeah. The Scottish would come in from having weekend visits. They'd have Temujizics or they'd have bottles of whiskey.
Yeah.
So if Brilliant. You want a night on the drink, you can go and buy yourself a bit of Charlie and a bit of vodka for the night. Everything apart from a young lady. Unless you're not being cleaned in the jail, like, but almost.
So were the guards all corrupted?
I would imagine one or two were, you know.
Yeah, that's how they got the stuff in.
My eye.
Yeah.
I used to come over the fence. There was an open jail. It was a category C jail, you know.
Just over the fence.
Just slung over the fence, you know.
What about visits? Did people visit you?
Of course, regularly. I've got a big family, you know.
Yeah.
I was never short of visits, you know, a couple of weeks.
How does that feel to have your visits?
Well, the visits, obviously, you know, you've been down that road. It's one visit what sticks in my mind was a sad one. My son came on a visit with his school friend, and he pointed us and he went, look, I have got a dad, there's my dad. You know, and them's the B-sides. You know, it's always glamorous sitting there and, you know, you got loads of money, fast cars, loads of birds,
yeah,
everything you want. You're sitting in prison and your son comes up on the visiting room, you know, and says, look at these friends, and, look, I have got a dad, there's my dad. It does affect you, and it hurts.
I used to hate visits, mate. I used to go back to be cell depressed after the visit. You know what I mean?
I've gone back off drunk. Well, you can take a bit of drink in the visits. You can have a drink.
I hate the visits because my brothers would bring me 100 quid up and it was just... It was just so easy, you just passed it under the table, don't you?
Of course.
Yeah. You looped it, that's it.
It's an anticlimax, isn't it? Someone comes all the way to see you, and you go back to your cell, and you fucking, oh, you know.
Well, you had people coming from England to visit you in America, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, my family flew 5,000 miles, yeah.
Mine don't love me that much. From all the way, I'm just going to Acklington.
So what did you do of yourself when you got out of Acklington?
Yeah, I came out of Acklington. I put on a number of different things. I opened a cigarette business. Me and my brother, you know, and I thought we'd have a little go of the legal side of things, you know. So we're getting these cigarette machines that were back, they were £1,000 a piece to buy. We bought some. I thought, wait, when the supply and demand was too much, I thought by the time we Leo could have had about 100 bars to put them in. I thought, wait, it's going to cost too much. So out ones were coming to a handy and I was stooling. Where are you getting that from? Oh, come on, give it in. I lost count at one stage. I didn't realise what so many machines. I've got 50-odd machines in the pubs. Yeah, half a stooling, I suppose, you know.
Did you put duty free fag in it?
Put everything in it.
Yeah. Back in the day, you did you have a 10p or like a coin?
Yeah, you didn't. People used to put the duty free tabs, and we did as well, obviously. And our lady said they put them for the club ones, and that people didn't have the difference.
Yeah,
yeah.
And have a little fiddly, you know. But unfortunately, I got the jail for that.
What was the charge for that?
Handling. They give us 15 months on the Wednesday. You know, them days when they've done 15, anything over 12 months. You've done 2/3.
Yeah.
So on the Wednesday, I got 15 month. They took us back to court on the Wednesday. They took us back to court on the Friday and reduced it down to 12 month.
Yeah.
Now, I said to my pal at the time, I says, we have went away. We've got so many months to serve. He said, aye, sir. I'm sitting in the cell after we've had the sentence reduced. And the school come in, he says to me, pal, he says, who we co-accused? He says, right. He says, you're out next week. My calculations got us down to 4 months. So I'm sitting there and I went, oh, what's going on here? No mention of me. So I thought, I'll just sit there. And so this goes back and forth. He goes, right, he's taking my reception. I thought, I want me a court day. I got rest of me. I got bail the same day. I got charged the same. All that carry on. It was the night before and this school came in the cell and he was filling the papers. He went, Stephen, you didn't look too happy for a man who was getting out in the morning. God love me, mate.
Couldn't believe you
now. Let's just see the miscalculation a few weeks out. So it was one force, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
I got back, you know.
Yeah. So what was that second prison you were in? Was it the same one?
I stayed in Durham for that one.
Durham?
Durham, yes.
What was Durham like?
It was all right, because we used to cook in the cells, you know.
Yeah. What was your recipes?
Well, what would happen is, my dad, we used to go to court at the time, and you had to get permission to be remanded over 7 days. Well, we refused that, because when we're going to court, we're getting a bit of, well, I suppose a bit dope, we get ourselves a bit of house of smoke. He's dropped off the court, and my dad would go down to the Moxie's, and he'd get £50 worth of Moxie Spencer's pre-packed meats in each bag for me and my brother, and he'd come up with £100 worth of Chinese. So when the schools and the busy would lower to have it in the cell, they were terrified of all. You know, that were happening in a cell, and we take a pre-packed meat and they say, yeah, we have a take, and you even had a private visit with your missus, so okay. Why would we want to be reminded of what 7 days for?
Eating good.
But were I? And, well, like I say, I suppose you say it a bit like saying the Goodfellas, but we're cooking in the cells, you know?
Yeah.
I was lying in a cell, and he has been smoking, I think, as you do in them days. So he has Stephen, look at the door, what? Yeah, he said, give us what? Well, that sounds like a bird. I says, it sounds like our lass. Looks out the window. And I asked Stephen, and I could see how she was behind the bush. She shouted, you've got Judge in chambers out. Hold it. It's been strange. I said, how did you know it was myself? She said, Stephen was the only one with loads of Marks and Spencer's food outside the window. Keep the food, you know. I said, well, I'll answer that, you know. It's not something you might expect. Your missus is shouting at you in the window. You're getting judged in chambers.
You would have loved that, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Peter was, like, his hustle was working the kitchen and getting all the ingredients to cook burritos and tamales and...
I'd cook all the Mexican food and bring it back to the wing and sell it for, like, packs of tuna and stuff like that.
Well, of course, that's what you've got to do. You've got to hustle.
Yeah, you've got to hustle.
You've got to hustle in them places, you know?
Yeah.
That's what you do. What you do on the streets, but you just eat a different way in the prison, you know?
I'd make gloves and beanies. You know, like, your old sweatshirts you'd have were, like, ripped up and that. I'd get them off all the people. And I'd cut a hand out of them like that, sew them together, make a pair of gloves and that.
Uh-huh.
Make a beanies so you can put them all down.
I had a school sweeper who used to give him, like, loads of tips, you know.
Yeah.
And some of some were good and some were bad, you know, but he used to always look after her. Get a bit of snow done, you know.
Oh, aye.
It makes it easier.
Do you have any other hustles that you've developed in prison?
Just survival, basically, you know. And that's what it's about, you know. Survival, keep yourself right, keep your nose clean. Somebody fucks with you, do nothing again. They'll not do it a second time, you know. Train hard.
Yeah.
Train hard, eat well. That's all you can really do, you know.
So in America, as soon as you go in, they ask you for your paperwork and shit.
Don't
like
bend
that.
Down for the soap.
it's all racial gangs in Arizona, and they ask you for your paperwork when you walk in. So when he got sentenced, he'd had a long day, and they come and asked him for his paperwork. He said, I just want to have a nap first. And he's like, no, you don't understand. You've got to show us your paperwork. So he just fucking knocks the guy out. he has a nap. And they come back and like, well, you know, we're going to find out about you. And a couple of days later, the guy's knocked out. They offer him his job. So he ends up running the building.
At first, I was a bit fucking scary because I thought I was going to get stabbed up. You know what I mean? But I didn't know what he was asking. I don't know what the fuck he wanted to know my paperwork for. I'd been on the coach all bastard day. I just wanted to get have a sleep, you know what I mean? You know?
40 winks later, you know?
Yeah. Get my head on the bunk.
So, you're a big name, and what I saw was people with big names, people test them and try them in prison to try and make a name for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Did anything like that happen during your incarceration?
Not really, no. They have incidents, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not a one-man band. I've got friends, associates, as everybody else, you know. If you hurt one person, you've got a group of people and put it back, you know. If you've got friends, that's what friends do. Look after each other.
Yeah. Is there any of those incidents you can tell us the story of?
Not unless I want to go to prison myself.
Statute of limitations and all that shit.
Yes, we'll stick it there. We'll just leave that one and that one, shall we?
In Atkinson, it was easy to get back at someone because your fucking door was open all the time apart from count.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah.
Fucking hell, so anyone could just have you any time.
Up to, like, 10 o'clock or something like that. Well, yeah, it was just open.
Yeah.
I was in prison when I was done my 10-year sentence. I had a week left in my prison sentence, you know. We had 2 weeks left, and a man rolled over on my brother. I'd gotten out of prison, and was a man. The prosecution alleged that the man was something to do with my brother's wife, you know. Anyway, somebody shot the man in the head. Naturally, he died. And a friend of mine ended up on the gear, and the police were feeding him heroin to go and make allegations against me, you know. And whilst I was in prison, the allegations were that this is... I got arrested, and I was on remand at the time for the amount of money my ministers blackmailed, basically, you know. Going to hold you up, you've got to pull up, you know, you've got to pay or else. So I'm on remand, I got a 10-year sentence for that, and you rolled over. And I got arrested for certain murders, and the man was a bisexual, and his boyfriend was a police sergeant. And somebody shot his leg off, you know, when I was on remand.
What the hell?
And I was in the jail, but they blamed me for it, you know. And
they
burnt the Crown Prosecution Service now. And it's easy for the police informers to say, it's one of the CS. I was in jail at the time, you know.
Yeah.
And you kind of get a bigger, better alibi, you know. But these are the sort of things. It's not what I've been arrested for. It's the calibre of the lower life who's had me arrested, what should be looked at, you know. And they said, I got asked one day what I'd been arrested for, and I had to mention murder. And I felt, do you know what, I felt so ashamed by saying it. I did it for some reason. I felt ashamed by saying it. This is what these degenerates have done to me, you know?
By saying the bisexual, too, they're stitching you up because it's a hate crime. You get more time, don't you?
What's that?
When you say, like, the bisexual bit, like you said then, it's classed as a hate crime.
Bisexual?
Yeah.
What's bisexual?
The story you were just telling us about.
Oh, that
policeman.
One, I thought it was. No,
not you.
But was he coming from there? I was, I. That's what they say, you know. I don't know. I was on remand at the time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know. I was in jail. I was in Durham jail. So, after a short while, me two brothers, John was doing 15 years for a security van and a depot robbery. Me and Michael would. Got convicted. Michael got a 12-year trial for the blackmail. I received a 10 on a guilty. Between the three, we're doing 37 years in prison, you know. When the Irish went back, there was only so many double category years left. There was 10 in the country. Me and Michael were both double category year prisoners. John was triple category year. He was in Whitemore unit.
So I didn't even know they had double category A and triple category A.
There was only three triple category year. John was one of them out of the 64 prisoners.
So for the Americans, let me just go over this. So in America, you got minimum, medium, max, supermax. So in the UK, category A is equivalent to supermax, is it?
Max, then supermax with double category. Yeah. Well, as I say, you've got triple category, which is a unit, a prison within, say, the prison, you know?
So you're like elite supermax.
Like Belmarsh.
Belmarsh. Well, I've just had my brother down there. My brother's been arrested for a crime in Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Both of the two were got arrested. What basically happened, my son and my nephew and my other two sons went basically to the nightclub and some doorman attacked them. My son's an ex-boxer, ex-Royal Marine.
They didn't know what the fuck, they didn't know the surname, like?
Well, found it off my son, you know. Yeah. He's a big bodybuilder. He went to sign, had a straight arm with my boy, you know, my boy punched the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
Well, they had other doorman from different parts of the country on and then went back to the kids and they attacked the Benz. Yeah, they're only kids, you know. Yeah. They not only attacked them, but they had done this, lifted the hands to a lot of different people, you know. One of the geezers on the door was New Zealand Special Forces, I swear, you know, and I must have thought he was so special. Anyway, he ran away after one of them got shot. You know, I'm not surprised because of the activity, you know, which way they went on, you know, bashing people up regular. And they didn't like that. That stopped the bullying off them. My brother got nicked. I got nicked. My brother went on remand. They put him down Belmarsh and put him up in the Old Bailey. And the evidence against him was circumstantial evidence. Mm. And they were wanting to give him a life sentence on circumstantial evidence.
Fucking hell.
That's what we're up against, you know.
So when you were in the double cat and the triple cat, what is it like? How is it structured in that building?
Well, I spent 15 months in the segregation unit.
Yeah.
And one sitting. I listen to these young drug dealers, and they complain about they spending their time in the jail. I had 15 months in the seg, being one shot, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if that's the case, lads, he's kind of do the time, you shouldn't do the crime, you know.
Basically. They think 15 months of life sentence.
Being in the seg, 15 months in the seg, with windows in the winter. They've got a tendency to turn the heating off in the winter.
I've done more than 15 months on the fucking toilet.
So what was it like then in the cat A, double cat and the triple cat?
Well, I got moved from, when I came out the segregation unit, I went down to Whitemore. I was down Whitemore for a while. You can cook in them places, you know. Michael arrived and John arrived. The three were went for a walk. And it was the first time in like 20 years with the three brothers. I went for a walk because one was in prison, they overlapped the other one. And it was a strange feeling, you know. My mum came on a visit to see the three. And the first thing she done was burst out crying. That's the first time I've seen her boys together, you know, for a long time. Sad.
No, you say you can cook. What, are you using a microwave or like, did you get like a Caligas ring or something?
In prison, you did have microwaves in the... sorry about that. It was all a Chinese flu. You could cook on the wings, you know. You could cook in the, like, say, they had three kitchens or something per wing. So if you could just buy your stuff and just kind of, you got in the food boat, you know. So
yeah.
It's cool. I learned to cook in the place, you know. I couldn't make cornflakes when I went in.
But
in the end, I was cooking for like 20 or so people.
But you keep your food in, you know, and sell. You don't put it in a fridge, communal.
Ah, it's a communal fridge, you know, and everybody knows who, you know. Obviously, you're going to get people stealing. There's a house, it's a big house full of thieves.
Yeah.
You're going to get people who steal, you know, but they did get caught now and then, you know.
They'll get smashed with that, though, won't they?
Yeah, they'll get striped up, you know. People will do that to them later, you know.
Yeah. I'd hate that if someone took my Chinese.
I bet you would.
26 fucking stone. Leave my Chinese alone.
So I did some time in Max and Supermax in Arizona, and the guards have got all this shank-proof body armor. They look like Darth Vader masks and all that shit, stab-proof. Is that what it's like in a double A cat?
I suppose when I was in the unit, I was next to a man called Bob Moseley. He's called like the British Hannibal Lecter. I think he's a Scouse lad.
British Hannibal Lecter.
He killed a man's head, and that's the one that story when he killed three in the jail, and he killed one in the nut house, or two in the jail and one in the nut house, and he ate the man's brains.
Have you heard of this one?
Bob Moseley's still in.
No, I haven't heard of that. Not the one eating the brains.
Well, that's his story, but he was next door to me. He was in the middle of meters on the other side. I said, he was double category as well. And I said to my brother, Mike, I said, I don't know anybody on this planet who's got a worse life than him. He went, he's got a telly, but you haven't one. I thought, you're fucking right. Yes, you're right. But life goes on, you know. Life goes on. Oops. Looking back at it, you know, it was a bit harsher sentence what they go with.
Yeah.
It wasn't within the guidelines. You make your bed, you line it.
Yeah.
You kind of complain, you know.
So did you go through a period of resenting that, but then accepting it?
Never accepted nothing like that. Just got a good onward. As I say, the guidelines for the crime would like say, total 4, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've received a 10.
Yeah.
We've got released as a category A prisoner as well. No rehabilitation whatsoever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you have decent barristers, like?
Yeah, yeah. I originally had Michael Mansfield at the beginning, but I lost him, you know. But trying to put a QC, so it wasn't some Mickey Mouse thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But just with the family name, the guidelines go out the window, you know.
You hear some people who say, oh, I've got all these years and all that, and yet they had a public pretender, you know what I mean, a non-paid attorney. And basically, you get what you pay for, don't you?
You do, but there's still guidelines. It's, you know,
if they say no less than that and no more than that, they should stick with that. They couldn't go over it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they never do with us, you know.
That's just your name, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's not because we're the worst anyway. That's just because we won't give them any money or any information, and they don't like it. You know, they've got Northumbria Police is one of the most corrupt police forces in the country. You know,
what's the biggest gang, isn't it?
Well, of course, they've got a name for them. What were they calling PGs? Police gangsters.
Police gangsters.
Ah, yeah. Because what happened is they say they'll raid a house, a drug dealer's house.
Yeah.
Get 20 grand and a kilo of kilo of cocaine. You know, the killer got the court and they find he's out of court for 2 grand. And films are cooking. Who's going to complain? I should be doing a 12, not a 2. And that's how they get them, you know. I hear them on the street. I hear these conversations, so I know what they get up to. You know, you see them in the flash wine bars in Newcastle with wads of money on our drug dealers and criminals. And footballers have wads of money, but police officers with wads of money buying 50 pound wrongs. You know? It doesn't happen. No. It doesn't happen, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had quite a few cops on here, ex cops and stuff like that. And,
the police have been policed, aren't they, though? There's always people watching them because they're fucking corrupt.
Yeah, yeah. One guy we had on here, Neil Woods, he was an undercover cop. He quit because he was assigned an undercover partner one day and he had a bad feeling about him. The drug gangs had paid that guy to go and get hired by the police. Yeah, that's how fucking crazy it's got now in the cops.
Yeah, it's happened,
Yeah. So what did you do with yourself then, just like day by day? What was your routine in prison?
Well, I spent a lot, I was double category, so I wasn't allowed to work. I was mostly behind the door, you know, and if you worked, you had to work on the wing.
Yeah.
Eventually got a cleaning job on the wing after a while.
So what is the cleaning job? What does that entail?
Pushing it around it.
Not the showers or anything?
No.
People shouting.
There was different, people had a job for that. They said, I had that job, you know, I'd probably clean the land. Somebody had the one, somebody had the one, somebody would clean the television room, somebody would clean the shower room, somebody would clean the kitchen, you know. It was just to try and get the lads who were, like, a category A, a job, basically.
You'd have people at the door saying, yeah, come here, you know, to pass cakes and stuff like that.
Yeah, it happens, but I'm a little bit above them passing little things.
Yeah.
I let schools do that for them.
Yeah. So when you wasn't working, how did you fill your time?
TVs came in, didn't they? TVs came in.
Porn channel?
We'll discuss that later, right? No, unfortunately, I didn't get no later on them. But the TVs came in, and I would train all the time. I was training twice a day.
Mm.
So I was very fit, the best condition I've been in my life, you know. I was doing a bit of mixed martial arts, boxing, and circuit training. So. And
could you get weights in that high security, whatever weapon?
Yes, you got allowed to go to the gym, you know, at certain times. Actually, got more gym with being a high security prisoner.
Yeah.
So that's one thing you could get. You could get like gym maybe 10, 12 times a week. So that was good enough for me, you know.
Which exercises did you prefer to do?
I was doing, I suppose, a power clean, circuit training, boxing, mixed martial arts.
Yeah. So you could do, like, sparring in there with people, or?
Not supposed to, you know, you can have unlicensed sparring. If you fell out with somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
That happened quite often. They're different people, you know, not necessarily myself.
Yeah. Why did you use his gloves, shall we use?
Yeah, you could get pads sent in, boxing gloves.
Oh, right.
So he had the pads and all that, you know, so... It's handy, I suppose, in them places, but the schools could see people were getting better and dangerous.
Yeah. See, in America, they'd use that. No, you shower shoes and drop shower shoes around, put bandage around it.
I went to Doncaster and they've actually, on the wing, they've got a punch bag on the wing. Every wing's got a punch bag, you know.
Yeah. Like to take a temper out, wouldn't it?
I think it would, but they're doing later when the people lace it over a long course of time, they come very dangerous.
Yeah.
And then that'll turn the schools are fighting kids that get attacked, so...
Well, they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger, aren't they? Mm-hmm. I always laugh at them people who get that big, but they forget to do the fucking legs. They're like that chiseled chest, and they've got like little pigeon fucking legs, you know what I mean?
I was in, I can remember one day I was in Franklin Prison, and I was with the doctors, and legs had been a category of high risk. You had the permission to go through every fence.
Yeah.
So as we're going through the fence, the bell goes off, and the nonce part of the bottom wings, you know? So we've got where frozen, we can't move anywhere. And all of them were coming out the gym, so it was about 50 of them coming out the gym. And I'll be honest, I've never felt frightened in the jails, but it was the first time I felt concerned. And I would have been a perfect scalp for that, all the sex case, because they get a lot of stick, you know, and rightly so. And when they were going to his high risk, they were showing some biggins as well. I don't think these are little, skimpy little old men, you know, 6'6" laddies that have fucking chest on them like that. And you can look and people would have problems with them. And they were shouting, get him for you, I will rape him, get him for you. In the school system, he says, whatever you do, don't attack them. I says, the first person I'll be attacking is you for the keys, man.
Whatever you do, don't attack
him. I felt very concerned. You know, they stand with dumbbells, get him for you, I will fucking rape him. I don't mind that, a bit of that, but that's a bit...
Sick bastards would do it as well, wouldn't they?
Well, of course they would. Of course they would.
Yeah. That video that fucking revolted you that we watched, what was it, where the guy was he was collecting debts and he ended up getting raped or something?
Oh yeah, it's fucking hell, the old money, so he ended up getting someone to bum him. That's not fucking right, is it?
No, it's not.
Well, we'll move on. Move on.
Were any other times during your incarceration you felt concerned?
I mean, that was a weird time, that incident there, that was one of the incidents that was stuck in my mind, you know, and I think
it can
happen in them places you hear about people getting, and especially if you've got 60-odd of them, and bear in mind the jail's unlocked, you know, and I'm stuck in there, next to their little area that could get to us, you know?
Yeah.
I was in the best condition of my life, you know, physically-wise and like the chin, but I knew then and then I had no chance at all because there was just too many of them, you know?
In America, now you have to go to a rape class to get taught how not to get raped. It's ridiculous. You watch a video of some predators in the day room, and the young people coming in are hungry, and if they take any food or sweets from the predators, they're in debt. And it's like, all right, you owe us money now, pay this. Well, I've got no money. Well, we're going to fucking kill you unless you go and do the sex act with him. And that's how they manipulate people into that.
They'll put a Twix or Mars bar on your fucking pillow. I never fucking help. I must have been an ugly cunt.
That's how you put all the weight on, is it?
I didn't get left one bar of fucking chocolate in 6.5 years, the fuckers. I used to buy mine and fucking run stall. But the pretty boys would have a fucking Mars bar or a Twix left, and then once the debt's it, that's it, that was their ass. 6.5 years, not one fucking, not even half a Twix.
I wouldn't complain too much about it.
No, come on. Unless that's me a Twix.
What about hooch?
We should get a bit later. I can remember when it was my birthday and I was in Franklin Jail and I was in the old buildings at the bottom. And one of the kids made with some hooch. And a few of the lads had spewed with it, which is only natural, you know. And the polish what was on the floor, I'd been there for 30 years, and the next year I'd stripped it down. And you think, well, if that's doing that to the varnish and taking varnish off the ground, but you can't remove a machine, what's it doing to your stomach? Yeah, but odd times would get odd vodka, you know, a bottle of vodka in different schools, you know.
Because in Arizona, it's like almost 50 degrees, so the walls heat up. So if you put a bag next to the wall, it cooks the alcohol, doesn't it?
Yeah, you just get a load of oranges, some water, some yeast from the kitchen. You put it in a bag and then you put it like the ceiling with like tiles like this. You just lift it up, get on your bunk, put it in there. 3 days later, fucking done. Bring it down, drinks the whole pod out, bottle it, leave it a couple of days in the bottle just to fucking fizz up, you know what I mean? Burp it, if you forget to burp it, it just explodes, and then you're in trouble because you've got the fucking people aren't getting visits and all that because you just fucking blew the pod up with fucking hooch smelling everywhere. You get good money for it. You used to get like fucking 3 tuners a bottle for that.
I think a lot of it, you know, like, made a lot of people bad as well.
Yeah.
It blew the heat off, but God knows what I've done. If I can strip polish off a floor, you know, what I've been lying on my face.
Nasty,
yeah.
Nasty.
What has it done to you?
Yeah, a lot of people have the shits on it.
You get blind on it. People getting blind on it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Especially if you would say someone.
Fucking hell.
I wouldn't be surprised.
A lot of the youngsters were fighting on it as well, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Space now with the MGOs now.
It's flooded, isn't it?
Mm. See, I've seen the videos, you know. And it's sad, you know, to see some of the states and the liberties.
They've got no respect, although I have to with it. I've seen one where the guy gets slapped for a bag of spice.
Sad. Sad.
You know.
Sad, you know. If you were one of, if you're a family member, you wouldn't like to see one of your own situation.
Oh, hell no.
But I think a lot of them will give them a joint, you know, and I think it's a bit harsh, you know, and it's spicing before they knew it in a bad way.
People just fucking with people, aren't they, as well, tell them it's like just weed and shit, just see them wig out.
Yeah, sad.
So, in your 10 stretch then, after the Cat A stuff, double Cat A stuff, where did they send you after all that?
I got released from the high security prison as a category. They reduced it from double category A to single category A.
Yeah.
Me and my two brothers, the three, we got released as category A prisoners from a dispersal prison with no rehabilitation whatsoever, you know. Just slung out on the street and that's it.
No probation?
Well, you get probation, but what good is them, you know?
Yeah,
tell you what you should be doing. I said, well, you don't live by the rules. What do you expect me to do, you know? Why shouldn't I have? Other people go to, like, category D prisons and that.
I was
going
to say, after 10 years, you think you just worked your way down slowly, you know what I mean?
Well, I started off as a cat bean. I come out as a cat here.
Yeah, so the opposite
here.
Did you feel a bit institutionalised after doing that one?
You could do, like, at that length of time, you know? I still seem like... I need time by myself sometimes, and I say to Wallace, I need to be by myself sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Just, it's 15 months in one sitting by yourself, a long time, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
And I had a few years behind the door when I was in Franklin, because I never had a job. So, but that's the life. If you meet your bed, you take the line, you know, and you kind of sit there and complain, and look, I've been a criminal, and I've done this, and I've done that, and I've been treated harshly. It guns with a type, you know, there's nothing you can do about it, not a thing, you know.
I used to get into books, me. I used to get the biggest, thickest book, like James Clavell books, with like 1,300 pages, and just get into that. But you'd end up, after a while, being able to read one of them in a fucking week, you know what I mean? Now that'd last me a fucking year.
When I went to jail, I couldn't read or write, you know, proper. So I started doing a bit of reading and learning in jail. I read a book by John Grisham, one of your jury. And I thought it was excellent, and I got half a year for it. And somebody had stole half the pages.
That's so, fucked up.
So the next one, I checked through, and it was still 2 or 3 pages missing. I didn't realise until the end. So I give up on reading books after that, I thought, right.
You just get people to just take the back pages, man. That's like taking a piece after the fucking jigsaw, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Just the fuck with people.
Mm-hmm.
People had syringes and blades and everything, don't they?
Yeah.
You see guys working out with library, with books from the library because you can't have weights.
Aye.
So they've got like sweaters or they've got mop buckets it's full of water.
Some people can do improvise, you know, in prison, you know, people do that. And it happens, you know.
There's so much wasted talent in prison.
Mm, they should use the time better, you know. I mean, they brought some industry in the prison, let the people work and send money out to the family and they wouldn't have to bounce off the door.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let them do some use while they're there, you know, generate some money.
Did you get paid to do your work in prison? Because in Arizona, you get 10 to 50 cents an hour to do these little jobs.
Yeah, you got like a tenner for cleaning, and you could like, get 15 quid and you enhanced.
Yeah.
And any hustles you had can done, you know, you get a bit off that, so you bought a bit of food with you, know?
Yeah.
Got your snout.
Yeah.
What extra food could you buy?
Legs of lamb, steak. Because it was in the canteen, I say, like long term prisoners allowed to buy these sort of things, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the sort of things you would buy. What you couldn't have, you made they say you wanted, you know.
Yeah.
And I was a good cook, you know. So I cooked a good Indians. I made a bit of chicken masala, tandoori chicken masala, a tandoori chicken leg, a bit of chicken tikka, chicken korma, and a madras on the side with pilau rice, a bit of salad,
okay,
and a bit, maybe it's a chapati. I'd always put it down in front of the screen and go, Come on, can you go? Can you go and get it up the gears? Look at it, that again. I've got to go on the fucking beans and toast. It's a fucking pricey, that's why.
Yeah. Suppose you got most of the spices from the kitchen as well.
Yeah, you could buy anything you wanted. Yeah, yeah, anything. There was a big list of spices you could order, you know. On a Saturday, everybody lads would have a full English, you know. You know? That's something to look forward to.
Be nice, that, like. Mm-hmm. I thought I was good getting them fucking stosties every day for working in the kitchen. You know?
Were there any situations where you had to have a prison weapon?
I know. Of course it was. You're going to have incidents like that, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously I had like one or two incidents, you know?
It's always good to know where the shanks are buried.
Well, I suppose you in them long-term prisons, you know, if you've got a Vic, you kind of can't turn up by yourself because the man, he may have a couple of friends and they're going to be tooled up.
Yeah.
So before you know, you've got a confrontation.
Because usually if someone has a beef where we were at, two guys, they just have a fight in the cell with the fists, beef is squashed. See him having a hug at the end of it, having a smoke, and that's that. Mm-hmm. But you get the odd person, don't you, who wants to come back.
Depends how personal it was, what the beef was. It was just like a disrespect, like he's fucking looking at me and you've had a bad day, you know what I mean?
It happens, you know yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, people serve time in prison, you know, they get a lot on their mind and somebody can look them in the wrong way. They can have a bad phone call, bad visit,
yeah,
bad letter.
And then it could be a bit more where, like, you know, for a fact someone's just come in and they've ratted on you and you've got paperwork on them. Mm-hmm. And you want to do a bit more, just smashing them, don't you?
No, well, that happens, that does happen, you know, quite often, you know. And to be honest, rightly so.
Rightly so, yeah.
Yeah, rightly so, you know.
As long as you show the paperwork. The one thing I didn't like is seeing a couple of people get smashed for no reason because they didn't have the paperwork on them.
See, prison, you know, it's not a nice place. And like it or not, it is survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to, take care of yourself.
You should be able to have like 4 days to show your paperwork, though.
It doesn't matter if you wear legs here. Reputation of what I suppose
what I mean?
Yeah, and if your name's attached to something, what's bad, you put somebody in the jail.
Yeah.
Rightly so, you got served up, you know, and that happened regular.
I've seen
plenty of that, you know.
Have you got any stories of things that you saw people get brutalised?
I've seen a lot of things. Like I say, I was in the prison, I was in the cell, like I say, I was on the way to reception one morning, and when I get there, reception's full. And reception are always places where people meet for the legs off different wings, and there's confrontation, there's trouble. So a fight breaks out, and this geezer lifts us and turns his and puts his back towards the fight. It was Raoul Moat. Raoul was getting released out of prison that morning. Very unhappy.
Let's explain who he is to people.
Raoul Moat was a lad who, for various reasons, I don't want to go into it because I spoke to him at length that morning. He was very unhappy by no family police, you know. One certain police officer was giving me his life in misery. I think it was a victim, me, myself, you know. You know, they portray him as a bad lad and all that. The man persecuted him. He took vehicles off him. Mm. He's seen his wife, once somebody's seen his wife had run away with a police officer and all that, you know. So the kid was unhappy. You know. And that morning, when all the schools were breaking the trouble up, we went in the little holding room. I spent 20 minutes talking to him. He went from there that day. He shot the geezer dead outside the house. He shot the police officer. And unfortunately got shot dead himself. You know, he got shot in the head with one of them rubber bullets, you know.
Because it was all over the news. I think that was when I got back to this country. What year was that, do you remember?
Did you see that?
Like a manhunt?
08 or something?
I missed that. I was still over there, wasn't I?
About 08, was it? 07, 08 or something?
About 10 years ago, almost.
Yeah.
I got back at 09, really.
09, that's right, yeah.
What they don't mention is, the misery what that police officer give role, you know?
Yeah.
And the media will have you believe that, this wild, crazy person. No, he was provoked. He was provoked, didn't he? You know? And I believe the kid was a victim.
Yeah.
I was only telling
you. There's other victims there. There's other victims involved, but he was also a victim, you know?
The media always side with the police, don't they? No matter what.
Yes.
Yeah, and fucking push it.
It was sad, you know, what happened to me. And as far as I'm concerned, the kid may rest in peace, you know?
Yeah. Did you mix with any or meet any high profile people in prison or come across?
Of course
any?
I did, because birds of a feather flock together, mixed with them all.
Any big
names? I was one.
Any other big names?
Yeah, plenty of big names, but I don't want to start nail dropping in. Yeah. One day I was came back from work and I saw the gym in the school. See, Stephen's a celebrity waiting outside your door to see you.
Your brother?
It was old Charlie Creer.
Charlie Creer.
He says, I need to see you. He says, your name's been repeatedly mentioned for me court case. And I say, he says, I've got to come to get a heads up on it, you know. So he tells us, he says, what happened? He says, it makes me to see these two people in this flash wine boy. He says, I get there. He says, All Saints have got a record contract. Spice Girls have got number one. He says, the place was bouncing, champion all over. Them had no connection with Charlie. He says, but he was telling us much where the party atmosphere was in the place. And he says, these two people come in to talk to him. He's doing retreat. He says, Charlie says, Steve, I was going to serve them 2 kilos of cocaine. He says, so when they come in, I'm talking, he says, to my surprise, there were two Geordies. He says, the conversation just turned a bit stale. He says, and I looked at him, he says, and I went, do you know the sales brothers? He says, I never got the look on their face, they were very sheepish. He says, yes, we know them. He says, can you ask me to get in touch with old Charlie? He says, that was the start of it. And a friend of mine who I used to look after, I was like his guardian angel in a sense, and I went to prison and he'd done his own thing, and he ended up getting assassinated at a later time. And he was connected with me, you know, so that's how my name got repeatedly mentioned in his court case. You know?
Wow. Mm-hmm. What about Bronson? Any stories about him?
I know the man and I speak highly of the man, but I've never met the man. My good friend Stevie Reef knows him very well, you know.
Yeah.
He put a foreword to me book, and I've got a lot of time for the man, and I've got a lot of respect for him.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Just let's say the name of that book again for people watching this.
The book's called Tried and Tested by the Sears. You can get on www.thesears.co.uk.
So if you want to check that out in his book, it's in the description box below this video. What about like high profile serial killers, anything like that? Or any?
I'm in a lovely geezer. Harold Shipman.
Shipman?
I met Harry, aye.
Harry.
I was in the doctors, and I discovered I was asthmatic when I was in prison. So the team is doing for different tests. And I see him walking in the thing, and different people are coming taunting us, and he came to me, but Mr. Sears, can I word with you? Is there any chance you could use your influence and try and get us on the wing? So I thought, oh, why not? Could do it, doctor. So I see the governor, and I say, is there any chance of Harold Shipman coming on the wing? He thought it was a joke. I said, what's the matter? I said, you put all the motors on one side, man. He said, can he man, man? He's a nice person. They weren't having it. They weren't having it, you know.
So when you finished this 10 stretch, what did you do with yourself then?
Came with various things, you know. Got myself a pub. Tried that for a short while.
He's trying to settle down.
No, well, what happened is I had a bar. My name was Connection. I was getting a wage out of a bar. And a rival criminal, a man called Paddy Conroy, decided to go and get a junkie to go and hide some smack and crack in my bar, you know, and get it raided.
Mm.
And that's why he didn't. I thought, when it's come to stage like this and you've got like so-called criminals planting drugs on you and getting you arrested, I thought it's time to get out of this before, luckily enough, the kid who gave the gear, he consumed it. Otherwise, I would have been nicked. Fucking I would have been
hell.
Nicked, you know?
Yeah.
Paddy Conroy went through a stage for over 20 years calling everybody and anybody a police informer, solely to deflect attention away from his low-life activities. And it got so bad in Newcastle that when a police informer calls an innocent man a grass to deflect attention away from him, it's commonly known as doing a Paddy Conroy, or shortly, he's doing a Conroy.
Is that what it's called, yeah?
Yeah, you. Every city he's got one, you hear it all the time, he's a grass, and it's the grass who's calling people.
Exactly,
they've actually put a term to it now, and that's what it is, he's doing a Conroy. When you have a grass, you're calling an innocent man a grass.
Well, he must have a bad name for doing that then.
It stinks worse than a public toilet, his name.
Is he dead now, Paddy?
A shameful one, sorry to say this, no.
Still walking around.
A long tail still crawling around, scurrying around the place, you know.
Wow. He'll get his.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you decided not to go into that business then, what did you do next?
I came out of that business, spent a couple of years wondering what I was actually going to do, you know. Didn't want to come back into the crime thing. Then I was given a lot of thought about writing a book. I taught me good part of Stevie Reef. Spoke to a few different other people, and Paul Ferris and all that, you know. Paul, well, he said, Stephen, I'll give it a go. Give it a go, you know. So we ended up writing a book. The book became a bestseller. Surprisingly, I'd never read a book. I'd read parts of a book, but I'd never read a full book, you know. What I'd done was I got my daughter, Rebecca, I tell her the story, and she wrote it down for us, you know, and that's how it came about. Since then, we've gotten a double BAFTA winner, Gary Fraser from Scotland. He got a BAFTA for Trainspotting. He's came on board, and the book's going to be turned into a film.
Brilliant, and, man. Congratulations.
We're doing the trailer in March. It goes out for funding, and we hope to be hitting the big screen sometime next year, you know.
Phenomenal.
I try, but let's say anything else, you know. I believe, in a sense, I'm still getting the money out of crime, of doing a film about crime. So what I want to do is, hopefully, if it's successful enough, I want to give some of the proceeds to the victims of crime, you know, some charity, and I think it's only right and fitting, you know, I do something like that.
Yeah, it's good karma as well, isn't it?
Well, it's right, I mean, I kind of just sit there and kind of get them, it's still getting the money out of crime, you know, and I, them days have passed for me, you know.
I was innocent, by the way. I've got a charity.
So okay. I was innocent. My mum will tell you. My mum will tell you if she was here. God love her. But I wouldn't melt my mouth.
Did your brother manage to turn himself around?
Aye. It's not for me to say what my brothers do, you know?
Yeah.
Let them get about their own life, you know? They're trying to live a law-abiding life, unfortunately. No, from your police, we're not lower. As I said earlier, not because we're the worst. It's because we're not about them or give them any money or information. And as I say, I'll say it again, I've said it before, don't think the police are the most corrupt police force in the country.
Definitely.
Is there a lot of brothers from where you're from? Is there like lots of families with brothers?
The day you breed up North East, you know. Causes like anywhere else, you know, you got big families in different places, you know.
Yeah.
West End, I was Elzig. We always stuck together when we were younger, you know, we're very clannish. I suppose in a sense that Sears Neil was a figurehead to the West End. That's why, unfortunately, today when there's crime committed, our name gets attached to it. Mm. So, like I said, 99% of the crime that's been committed, even though they say the Sears, it's not a thing in the world at the war, you know?
Yeah.
And plus, we're not criminals anymore, so the chances of it being anything at all, that's why it's not.
There's up north, a lot of like the big family names, brothers, they tend to be friends, they tend to stick together.
Some do, some don't, you know? So it just depends what sort of person you are, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we've still got, like I said, plenty of friends, you know, plenty of big family, plenty of friends. We're well got, well respected, you know, and rightly so.
Was there a turning point then where you thought, that's it, I'm just absolutely never going to go back to crime?
It was my mum, God love her. May she rest in peace. She was the one who takes this serious to my Steve Noah. And people don't understand this, you know, it's actually harder to be a criminal than it is to be a businessman. And, you know, and you sit there, because what you've got to lose, you can always lose, if you lose a few quid, you can always get a few quid. You kind of get your liberty back, unless you escape. Apart from that, you know, but, you know, that, a businessman, you know, if you're capable of making a success at crime, you'll definitely progress in the life of business.
You're always watching your back, aren't you? And you keep up with
crime. Yeah. I've been asked a couple of times, Steve, you're going to be in the shop window with your film. Is there any idea what you would like to do afterwards? And I'm thinking about opening a security consultancy, you know. I suppose if you're sure as your premises, I can show you your weaknesses, you know. I can show you how you'll be had, you know.
Yeah.
Do you want a can?
No, I love a vodka, mate.
No. You want a can?
No.
Yeah, talk about your mum then. My mum flew 5,000 miles to visit me. I had to get, you know, all these searches and sniffer dogs and wait for hours in the heat. When I first saw her in the visitation room, just sat there, you know, just all, sad, my face all sad and looking like I'd aged her.
Uh-huh.
And I speak to the school kids now and I tell them that and I say, look, I can still see the hurt and pain on my parents' faces that have caused them.
It does. At the time, as you're doing the crime, when we were selling and collecting and all that, didn't have a care in the world, did we? The money was coming in, nice birds, nice cars, and it's like everything's going good. You feel almost untouchable, you feel like no one's going to get you.
It's not until you get to a day you realise you're right from wrongs, you know?
Yeah.
Like the moment I'm trying to go into prisons to talk to some youngins, you know, I'm trying to do some good. I've talked to my big pal, Brian Cockerell, he's prepared to come with us, and Paul Ferris, you know.
Brilliant.
Consider going in if I can get in the door, like talk to the young offenders, maybe still some good, you know, talk about the life of crime.
Well, they definitely listen to you. You've been through it, haven't you? I don't know. You get these people go to prison and they do talks, but they've never been in crime.
If you would get a footballer to somebody who was about football, educate them, you get a singer, a musician to talk about young kids, yeah. So why can't you get a criminal to talk to criminals? It makes sense, doesn't it? People might say it's immoral, can't end up and put money in. But if it works, it's gotta be done.
Well, they let you in a prison, like, on that side of things.
They've dragged us in once or twice when I haven't wanted a gun, so when I want a gun, I'm having trouble going in. It's a strange predicament, you know?
You're going to do a talk and look at Nick.
Well, they've dragged us in once or twice when they wouldn't let us out.
So have you been in any schools?
Not as yet, because, like I said, we were in to get past, you know? So it's a slow process, unfortunately.
Hmm.
It's a slow process. I think people, when they go, oh, criminals, we don't want them in here. Well, have one stock them, but they'd rather have somebody come back from a background where they've got no experience whatsoever. Yeah. And I think these people are going to educate them, and they're not. They're not them doing that with hardship, hunger, hardship.
Was it easy for you to get into school, Sean, because our crown was in America, not here?
Because I was telling my story, and the DBS check thing tells a bit of that. It's not a problem. It's like... they're looking for people with sex offences mainly to not to stop them getting in schools. Mm-hmm. If you and drugs education under the PSHE curriculum kind of created a job opportunity for me because I was a drug criminal.
Yeah, there's so, sex offences, but they're not really going to have highly violent people in there either, are they?
Violent crimes might be a problem.
High profile criminals.
If you formed your life, I can imagine.
They get past that door, you know. They hear your name and they're going, oh, yeah, the alternative ways and motives, you know. But mine's genuine. I want to actually do some good, you know.
Yeah.
And I believe I'll get to talk one kid out of life of crime. I've just succeeded.
You've helped someone out, haven't you?
Aye, aye.
Do you have young people reaching out to you in your community?
Yes, I do. Yeah, very regular. I'll always get somebody to come to us. I'll always tell someone's father, I'll come over and talk to his laddie, you know. And I'll kind of put the fear I've got them sometimes, you know. They think they're going to go and sit there and go, oh, Steve's going to come and cuddle us and all that. But oh, no, I won't do that. I'll tell them exactly what you're going to face in prison, son.
For young people watching this, then, what would you tell them?
Well, you know, I've lived this life. And I've gotten to the top of my profession. I didn't chuck the how they told me because I got beat or I ruled over, nothing like that. I finished at the top of my profession. And I wish I'd devoted my life to a business, you know, because it's just been a waste of fucking life, to be honest. The time I've spent in prison, I would have had more children. I believe your wealth should be judged by the health of your children, not by what your financial bank account should be.
You're still young, though.
I'm 54, you know, but I believe I can do some good and I want to do some good, you know. And yeah, getting back to what I was saying, I've been there, seen there, done it. You know, I'm speaking from experience.
Do you have any regrets?
I got caught a few times, you know. Who wouldn't? You know, I'm honest with you, of course. Because it's not until you actually serve them long-term sentences that you realise, and you, as I said before, when my son come in, says, I've got a dad.
Yeah.
These things hurt, you know, I'm only human like everybody else, you know.
That would hurt, dad.
It did, you know.
And they don't say it to hurt you, either. They say it just...
Just generally, it's your baby, you know. You're married, there's only four, it's about five at a time. So... came when I was talking to my mum one day, and she says, "My Steve, look, please, how I consider." I says, "Ma, for you, I'm going to turn my life around." Unfortunately, by the time I started trying to, like, put the book in progress, my mum took early, and she had a stroke, and she didn't get to see that light of that path I've led, you know. So I'm doing it for her, you know. I want to do for not course. Just for myself, but let me mark me. It gives us the push to go forward, you know. And that's what me. I said, your mum was a highly intelligent person. You know? She was a civil servant. Attraction, as she's saying to me, Dad, I don't know.
Well, your books are the right way forward, aren't they?
Yeah. I'm not trying to glamorise crime like any film. I'm only sure what effect crime has on you. You know, like, say, yes, it's good times, it's bad times. But, you know, you've got the effect it has on the kids and that.
Yeah.
You know, it changes them. It changes them. You know, and I wish I had been there all them years. Unfortunately, I wasn't, but I see the ever me ways now, and I wish to go forward.
Yeah.
And do some good.
Back in the day when you went over to Spain, was it like sort of, you watched the movie The Business?
It's just like that.
Was it just like that, just, yeah?
It was for me.
Fucking brilliant, that, like.
Half our friends, we party with the dead now. Every year we get another word, another one has died. Have you lost a lot of people on the way?
Of course I have, yeah, I have. People have been shot dead, not, you know. Yeah. Friends, family.
It's bad when you go more funerals than Christmas, isn't it?
Sad, isn't it?
It is, isn't it, really? Yeah.
Yeah, look at a lot of misery and that, you know. And I look at, like, say, and I think, like, say, when the persecution will ever stop, I've known from the police. My dad got a man came forward and he says to me, Dad, he says, listen, he says, I've got paperwork there. He says, I've hacked into the national computer. He says, and I've got evidence there that your son, John, was fitted up. My brother John was done 15 years at the time. He got found not guilty for his security van debt, robbed that. He got not guilty, and he got guilty of robbing a security van of $300,000 or something. And he received a 15-year sentence. The man says he had evidence to prove this. So he got somebody, he feed me dad, drip feeding him. He made him eat the same. My dad was looking at the paperwork. He put a gun to my dad's head there. Dad jumped to one side, shot him in the jaw. The bullet came from the other side there. I got word came from us, you know, and I rushed to the hospital. When I rushed to the hospital, his car's outside the window where the bullets went through. That's all the glasses all over, blood all over the car. So I rushes in. He's on here, his face has swelled up with a bullet wound. And the man is on the telephone and he's pleading. He's saying, Stephen, he says, look at the special branch, mate, let's do it. You know, and, you know, bear in mind, the man's not going to stop. He's just trying to kill me for that now. He's going to try, he knows I'm a danger and he's going to come try and kill me.
Jesus.
So I didn't want to rave to him, you know, to be honest. What I said to him was, I was trying to sweet talk him. And I says, listen, I'll do anything to let my dad live today, please, you know. And he stood for him. He says, I'll see you in the park in 15 minutes. I thought, well, you must have thought, well, that wouldn't get as much time. But I was Elzik, you know, West End, a lot of active criminals, a lot of active armed robbers, and a lot of people tooled up. So I'm well got in the area, and, you know, my life's in danger. I explained it to certain people that come to help us straight away. And they says, look, if he's there, just make your way to the bushes, around the lake. And I walked around the lake, he says, he's going to approach you. So this man come up to us. It's not his feeling when you walk in the room, you're waiting to be shot. You know, but the man is going to, you know, he's going to kill me, or he's trying to kill me dad, he's going to try and kill the rest of us. So this man approached us, come walking to us, and I could hear, I was right next to the bush, it was pitch black, and I could hear the guns cocking, and all he asked was a light. It was just somebody in the park, and that's what light, and I thought, fuck, that was close. He went from there, the man handy selling the police station.
You could have gone for that person though, couldn't you?
No. The man handy selling the police station that night, you know. I got nicked and remanded a little time, and they put me in a cell below him. So he thought it was great all day, having gone on, how much pleasure I got shooting me fella. And the scooters come running, don't you want Stephen, I've had enough of him, how about come? And he opened the geezer's door. The geezer was crying, stopped for saying, please, I said, I'll just tell tease news off, come here, pull his fucking eye, you know, something. You know, all the nastiness and coming out with, you know. Obviously, I wanted to hurt him, and I would have done if I get my hands on him.
Of course you would have.
Lo and behold, he went to court. He had been a police informer, and they says he had been so helpful to know from me. A police didn't know what to do, so they gave him 4 years for assassination attempt on my dad, you know.
Oh, yes.
My pal put 100 stitches in his face, and they gave him 4 years for doing that.
Jesus.
Should have been his jugular vein.
Oh,
so that's what it is, you know. Like, say, if you're an informer, you're kind of going to be in there and try that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If people got a problem with you, though, they should take it out on you, not your family.
That's fucked up, isn't it?
Of course.
I mean, it's only rule that, isn't it, really? If you've got a problem with someone, you don't go to their mum and dad's house and take it out on them.
It's law, isn't it?
Well, people are what they are, you know, and it's like in life, if you have one man band, you've got to accept it. If you were a group of people who will help you and support you, it's different, you know, and I think it's a bit can prevent some accounting, you know. I still like, see, even though I'm not an active criminal anymore, I still get a lot of hassle off the no from the police regular. I was lying in bed watching a bit of TV, and he has a noise outside. And what their new gimmick is in Newcastle now, it'll be all over the country. The top of Blake's street lamps, they put little domes in them and they put the hidden cameras in them, you know. So it gets up, takes one down, there was a four-way camera. Bear in mind, the lamppost is only 6 inches from my door, from my back gate. So I've got one at the back, one at the front, and every junction, every road leading off my estate, it's got a covert police camera on it, and the top of the lamppost. So this is what you've got to pull me, you know, but I'm not doing anything. I've received an Osmond one every 6 months or so.
It's an invasion of privacy, that.
I think, as I say, like, I've received Osmond ones quite often. You know, I think maybe if anything, might prevent them coming. Jesus, they can come, but they can't. I'll let them in. I'll not let them out.
If you're staying out of trouble, though, the cameras are, I mean, they're even better because there's evidence that you're not doing fuck all, are they?
They're not bothered, you know, they're not bothered up there while we're, you know, they're just... Yeah. As I say, I've been arrested for a variety of serious crimes, but it's not the crimes itself, it's a calibre of the people what's had were arrested. One man got to me brother John, arrested for... My brother was nicked for murder. And this year, on the last year of the trial, somebody contacted one of the jury members. Well, only people who had access to them was enough from the police, you know.
Mm.
So they got this chunky to come forward and says that he made the phone call for, which if I was going to get somebody to take him, I wouldn't be getting a junkie involved in anything, you know. So I get snicked to put on remand. I got a trial with no jury. It was only the second time in the country you got a trial with no jury, you know. So my barrister, my QC, came to see me and she went, Stephen, I actually know this judge personally. He's already found you guilty. He's going to get a life sentence and he'll die in a special unit, but when SSUs, unless you get the court case turned over. So they get a trial with a jury. The trial started, Now, we've got a massive compensation claim going in for them for what they've done to us there. But bear in mind, the prosecutor stumbling court, he says, I should be asking for a life sentence for the Sears brothers, and life should mean life. This man knew we were innocent people. Now, I can't go and discuss too much of this now because there's a legal situation happening now with a compensation claim. But I'll get back to that the next episode when I speak.
Yeah, cool.
That's terrible, that little stitching you up like that. Everyone's entitled to a fucking jury, for God's sake.
The calibre of the witness. The man was a junkie who had married a Thai prostitute.
Why the hell was sitting would you in one get room, him to help you out? You know what I mean?
You wouldn't have the time of day.
You'd tell.
So he married a Thai prostitute. He was in one room where his missus was knocking the services out for £2.50 and £5 a pop, you know. You know, and this is the calibre of the people, you know.
Fucking lowlifes to get up in court and then they... Because it's against you, they're going to fucking accept this person's word, you know.
Well, a junkie who's living off of moral earnings, he's not exactly...
Surprised they even let him on the jury.
He wasn't on the jury, he was a witness.
Ah, right.
He was a witness, you know.
Yeah.
He witnessed nothing but the scissors. He's adamant that we'd used 2 telephone boxes and they knew we hadn't. They hadn't been used to it, they knew he was telling lies. He's the only witness against him. There was no other evidence than just a junkie. And he says, sir... So all he was at his telephone transfer, all he was after was money off his handler.
Yeah. A lot of them have got their own crimes and then their cases go away, don't they?
Some do.
Some do, yeah, yeah. So what is your life like now then?
A lot more busier since with the film and Alex and two are going to hopefully... it's come together slowly but surely. It's hard work. It's hard work getting it done. It's excitable, you know, it's enjoyable. And we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward, yeah. You know. And we're going to give, like, as long like, say, people in Newcastle and the North East who's actors but never had an opportunity. So we're going to give them a little bit of an opportunity and maybe a stepping stone. It may change the course of somebody's life for the better, and hopefully it will do, you know.
Yeah.
So one or two ex-criminals, I've told myself, well, come and give it a go. Come and give it a go. And if it's any good, you'll have a part in the film. These are active criminals. And I've spoken to the families and they went, Stephen, if you can do that, I've done much in the kids' name, but you can do this for such and such, we would be over the moon. And the kid is excited.
You got to get Jimmy Nail.
Yeah, it's better than him.
Are there any of your craziest stories that we've missed out?
When I finish this, there'll be about 100 I can think of, you know.
Yeah, but yeah.
But it's been enjoyable, don't you, lad?
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate what you're doing.
Huge pleasure having you on as well.
I'll be back again, lad.
Cheers. Cheers. Yeah. Especially when the second book comes out. Tell everybody what the second book's going to be called.
It's going to be called Operation Sears. It's basically about a man who, a heroin addict, who decides to get nothing but police for feeding him heroin. And he was accusing him of different murders, you know, and like, there's a variety of unsolved murders. That's the one I'm accused of having the police officer shot, you know. Four and some murders and people getting kneecapped, you know, legs shut off, not, you know. It's just, I read it, you know, and it was about me, not to be honest. I felt a bit frightened. That's how outrageous it is, you know. It was so bad. I said, this is going to be done in the book. Sure, that's where we're at with that one, you know.
And if people want to contact you, what's the preferred way of them contacting you?
From
you,
sir, that's that.
Why you be brief?
And you'll get no comment.
Do you have social media stuff?
Yeah, I'm on social media. You can catch us on the... Yeah. We've got a page on Facebook, the CS page, you know, and the CS film.
So we'll put your Facebook page in the description box.
Yeah,
and all the links to the books... And if people want to send you a message, can they send you a message on the Facebook page?
Of course they can. We'll give you all them details, you know, and they say, contact me or Steve Riff, you know.
And his mobile number is...
So, if you've enjoyed this, please put your questions and comments below. Huge thank you to all the new subscribers. If you've not subscribed, it's free. Subscription logo is in the bottom right-hand corner. Huge thank you to all the people who donated on PayPal, Patreon, Just Giving, Subscribe Star. To keep the production of the podcast in the studio level of sound engineers, cameramen, and to bring down brilliant guests like Stephen today. So we thank you for all your support as well. So cheers from Liverpool. Let me give you a hug, man.
And thanks for buying my t-shirts too.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks, big fella. Wait,